So today we're going to learn about Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak experiences a famine similar to the one that happened in the days of his father Avram. Isaac begins to migrate southward. He comes to a land which is called Philistia, which probably today would be Gaza, but it has nothing to do with the, so to speak, Gazan people. The Philistines have long disappeared from the face of the earth. Isaac is on his way down through what the world calls today the Philadelphia Corridor. He's probably on his way into Egypt because he figures dad went there, mom went there, I'll go there too. And since Egypt is irrigated by the Nile Delta, in this way, I'll be able to survive the famine. Hashem comes to Yitzchak and he says, not so you. Your father and mother did go down to Egypt. You belong in the land of Israel. You're an Olat Tmima. You're different from Avraham Avinu, from your father. And I'm going to take care of you. Everything is going to be just fine. So Yitzchak has been displaced now. He has left Hebron, which is Ir HaAvot, the city of the patriarchs and matriarchs. And now he was on the way down to Mitzrayim. Instead, he settles in Gaza. Not a great place to live, but you know, it's going to do. And the second reading picks up chapter 26, verse 6. Vayeshev Yitzchak Begror. So Yitzchak settles in the land called Gror. A strange thing happens. Well, maybe not so strange. Vayishalo anshe hamakim leishtei. Everybody starts asking questions about his wife. Nobody says, hi, how are you? What do you do for a living? Can we help you? Do you need anything? He said, what's her status? Married? Because we checked Facebook and it's like in a relationship, but we don't know what that is. So Yitzchak says, he says, I guess I'll do what my parents did. He says, my sister. Why did he do that? Why would he lie? Ki yore loymer ishti. He was afraid to say, it's my wife, because Rivka was an exceedingly beautiful woman. And in that part of the world, exceedingly beautiful women either were a rarity or were abused, just like they are today in Hollywood. And this is a real problem. Yitzchak fears that they will actually kill him, because in Hollywood today there are no mores or morals whatsoever, and adultery means nothing. But in those days, the one thing they did keep was adultery. Murder, no problem. But adultery is a problem. So how do you make sure that you can do what you please if a woman's married? Simple. She magically becomes a widow. And then no adultery is committed. So penya harguni anshe hamokem, maybe the people will kill me, al Rivka, because of Rivka. Ki toivas marehi, because she was of an exceedingly beautiful appearance. Now the Psitkes Zutrasa says, why didn't Avimelech take her? He took Sarah. Why didn't he just abduct Rivka the way he did before? So the Psikta says he was a little nervous at the last time. He didn't think it was a good idea just to kidnap women. So we got a slight upgrade to ancient society. Not a good idea just to grab her. We'll figure this out. And it's because Avraham Avinu had rebuked him, says Chizkuni, when they took Sarah. He said, how come you lied to us? And Avraham Avinu responded, Rak ein yiras alikim, because there's no reverence, no fear for God in this place, and I can't trust anybody here. So he felt a little stupid, Avimelech, and he wasn't going to play this kind of game again. But he was afraid they were going to kill him, and this is the same kind of thing that Avraham Avinu experienced. Rashi says in Pasuk Yudalit, Li'ishtoi, what is Li'ishtoi? They asked to his wife. Rashi says that the lamed in front of the word ishto, which means wife, could be understood as the word al, meaning al ishtoi, on his wife or about his wife. Ukumai, like we find with regard to Sarah Yimenu, he said, Avraham Avinu said, that any place we come, Imri li achihu, just say he is my brother. So it's a little bit slightly euphemism, it's slight grammar, but essentially you cannot take it literally. Li ishtoi, they didn't ask to his wife, they asked about his wife. So Yitzchak and Rivka masqueraded as brother and sister who were living together, and in this way they would be safe. Vayhi ki archu loy sham hayomim. So the days came to pass. And you know what happens when you're hypersensitive about things and really worried about making sure that nothing goes wrong, and then a lot of days pass by and nothing happens. So what happens then? You become less vigilant. So Yitzchak and Rivka became less vigilant. They stopped trying to camouflage their lives. Vayashkim Avimelech, Melech Pelishtim, Ba'adach Elein, but Avimelech, the king of Pelishtim, was sitting with his telescope, and he was busy looking out his windows and trying to figure out what's going on in Yitzchak's house, because the only one who hadn't become less vigilant or less obsessed was Avimelech. And this wacko stalker was busy checking out what's going on in Yitzchak's house. Vehine, behold, Yitzchak mitzachek es Rivka ishta. He sees that Yitzchak is gladdening Rivka, which is a euphemism, means they're being intimate. Rashi says, ki orchu hayomim, So Yitzchak was there a long time. Nobody bothered him. Nobody started up. Nobody blessed it. So, you know, they figured, okay, it's like the guard was dropped. It's a natural thing. Omar, he said, Me'ata inli lidak. I don't have to go around masquerading and telling people it's my sister. It's past. That threat is over. Me'achar shaloi anasua adachshav. Since she was not abused, molested until now, probably everything will be just fine. V'lo nizhar liyes nishmar. He wasn't careful about guarding things, so he let his guard down. V'yashkef Avimelech, and Avimelech, the cuckoo stalker, the obsession, really a man obsessed with sex, like a crazy guy. Yisara comes, abducts her. Like this is like unbelievable. He's the king. Shera'uhu, he saw Yitzchak alone with Rivka. And he saw Mishamish Mitasi. He saw that they're actually intimate. Exactly how he saw this, I don't know. Maybe he bugged the place and wired it, but that's what he saw. And when he saw this, so then he realized that Yitzchak had not been telling the truth, that in fact it was his wife. Now, whose window was he looking through? So according to the Chizkuni, he was the proverbial peeping Tom. He was looking through Yitzchak's window. You got to wrap your head around this. The king of the country was peeping through Yitzchak's window. Ve'yizmir. Like, this is like pathetic. The Targum says, no, he was looking through his own windows. Maybe he had a telescope. I don't know. What exactly did he see? According to Rashi, he saw intimacy. According to the Chizkuni, he saw the shades closed, so he figured out what must be going on there. According to the Maskil of David, it's a euphemism when we say looking in the window. He was gazing in the stars. And in the stars, he saw that Yitzchak and Rivka are husband and wife. The Taz says Avimelech opened the window on the outside so he'd be able to come back and do a peeping Tom job later. At any rate, however you slice this or dice this, the bottom line is the same. Avimelech looks in the window and he sees that Yitzchak and Rivka are not brother and sister. Vayikra Avimelech li Yitzchak. So he calls Yitzchak Vayomer. He says, Achine Ishtachahi, it's your wife. Echomarta Achesihi, how dare you say it's your sister? Vayomer Elav Yitzchak. Yitzchak says, now truthfully, Hi Omarti, because I said, Pen Omos Aleha. I love my wife. I was not prepared to die for her. I didn't think that was a good idea. So I had no choice. Like, I came here. Everybody's asking about my wife. Nobody said Shalom Aleichem even. They want to know if she married, is she not, is she single, is she available? What choice did I have? He says, so I really didn't have a choice. I had a feeling they would kill me for her. Rashi does not comment on this idea. However, the Rebbeinu Miyuchas says like it's like Ochin. He said, you said it was your sister. Indeed, however, in fact, it's your wife. So Avram said, Yitzchak said, well, I had no choice. Vayemir Avimelech, Avimelech said, woe is to you, my friend. What have you done to us? Kimat shachav achad ha'omes ishtecha. You know, somebody could have been with your wife. Somebody could have been intimate with your wife. But he says, achad ha'om. Achad ha'om, we usually think of one of the nations, one of the people. Well, you know, some Joe. But in fact, that was not the meaning of achad ha'om. Achad ha'om means, says Rashi, ha'miyuchad ba'om, the outstanding one of the nation. Zehamelech. In other words, Avimelech basically just dropped his guard and told Yitzchak what he was planning to do. And he said, you know, I came very close to doing something really bad. And then, if I had done that, Avimelech in the pasuk concludes, Vehevesa Aleinu Asham, you would have been singularly guilty in bringing upon us great guilt. Now remember, like we learned in the beginning today, Avimelech is still under the influence and under the duress, the long shadow of his past experience. He is a little nervous about having dreams where God appears to him and everybody's suffering. So he's worried about this. And he knows that the guilt ultimately will be incurred by the whole nation. And so he's very, very displeased. And he expresses his displeasure to Yitzchak in that sense. And if it had happened already, at this point, he would have brought upon us a devastating amount of guilt and terrible sin. Yitzchak doesn't respond. This is not what's there to say. He said what he has to say, and Avimelech is off on his own trip, but like this is the reality. Vayitzav Avimelech is called Ha'om Leimer. Avimelech sends out a royal edict. And the royal edict states, Hanegeb Isha Zeh Uvi Ishtai. Anybody who so much as raises a finger to touch this man or his wife, Mois, you will be put to death. And so now we know that Yitzchak is under, he's a royal protectorate. Nobody's allowed to touch him, because if they do, they'll be killed. So whatever desires or lusts they have, getting killed is not one of them. And therefore, Yitzchak and Rivka are now safe to live as Ish ve'Ishto. And then what happens? And then Yitzchak becomes a farmer. And so, Vayizra Yitzchak be'eretz ahi. Yitzchak plants in that land. Vayimso bashana hihi. He finds in that year, Me'ya she'orim, a yield of 100-fold. Vayivarcheyu Hashem, and God blesses him. Rashi tells us this business of be'eretz ahi and bashana hihi seems totally superfluous and unnecessary. You want to say Vayizra Yitzchak, Yitzchak planted. He found 100-fold, fine. Obviously it was that year. But this is a continued narrative. Obviously it was that place. Here he is, and it's now. So when else would it be? And where else would it be? Why does the Torah have to say, here and now, Yitzchak did this? On the contrary, if it wasn't here and now, the Torah would have to specify. From the fact that the Torah wouldn't specify, I would know it's at this time and in this place. So Rashi says, even though it's not considered Eretz Yisrael proper, like the land of the seven nations, even though later on it does get added onto the border of Eretz Yisrael, but nonetheless it is somewhat diminished in spiritual stature, and therefore it would be less of a likely place for miracles to happen. Now Yitzchak wanted to go outside of Eretz Yisrael to the land of Egypt. Hashem says, you're an Eilat Tamima, you're a perfect offering, you can't leave the land of Israel altogether. So it was like a step down. Gerar was a step down. It wasn't outside of Israel, but it wasn't exactly Israel proper. So it's not a place where miracles just kind of appear in the streets. See, Eretz Yisrael is a holy land. And because it's a holy land, there's extra mitzvahs to do, and holy stuff can happen. We expect miracles in the land of Israel. Even a guy who didn't believe in very much, like Ben-Gurion, when asked if he believes in miracles, he simply said, no, we rely upon them. Eretz Yisrael relies on miracles. That's the nature of Israel. Living in Israel and miracles go hand in hand. But now we're outside of Israel. Well, Rashi says not entirely. We're kind of outside, but still tethered. And so this is the chiddush, this is the novelty then of the verse, that it was Be'aretz Ahi, in that place, not a place in which you would expect miracles. And Bashana Ahi means Afal Pi She'ene Kisikno, even though that year was not the way things were usually. So it's a step down to begin with. Others maintain that Be'aretz Ahi in that land means that it was a land that generally is not very fertile. It's more like sandy. It's not. There's a lot of fertile areas of Eretz Yisrael. This is not one of the fertile areas. Rashi doesn't take that approach. Anyway, but it wasn't so fertile, maybe, and especially this year where the land was not really prolific. It was a year of famine, which means that in the land of Israel, rainfall had been scarce. And nonetheless, Me'ya She'orim. Rashi says, what do you mean 100-fold? 100 more than what? Whatever you get is what you get. How could you have 100-fold? 100-fold means I started with something, and I expected one thing, and I ended up with something else. How would that be? So Rashi says, Sha'amaduha, that Yitzchak guesstimated in an educated way. Kamaru Yolaseis, how much did he imagine? What did he think this field could possibly produce? Va'asasa al-achas sha'amaduha me'ya. And instead the land produced for every one, 100. So if he thought he was getting 100, he ended up with 100,000. Pardon me, 1,000. If he thought he was getting 1,000, he ended up with 100,000. So everything was multiplied 100 times. That's like incredible. No stock market has ever performed that well. Nobody's field has ever done that kind of thing. But Rabbi Seinu Amru, our rabbis asked, why was Yitzchak busy estimating and guesstimating? What was the issue? And the answer, Zele Meiser, this was for the purpose of Meiser. Yitzchak was planting the land only for the purpose of being able to give tzedakah ma'aser from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he wanted to know before how much ma'aser he might have, so he'll know what's available for distribution. And so, let us now take a look at the Medrash, which states something fascinating in the Biurim book.
It's not the right one.
Huh?
It's not the right one.
It's not the right one. You are right. All right, can somebody bring the right one?
Yeah, where is it?
It's on the top shelf over there. The I got the wrong books in next week's parsha. Okay, while we're waiting for those books, so let's talk a little bit more about this business of the land that produced a hundredfold. According to Rashbam and Rabbeinu Bechaya, as I mentioned, this was not just a question of not being in the land of Israel, but it was Oretz Kasha. It was difficult land. Menachem, a chair and a top shelf. Top shelf in the right-hand corner there. Thank you. Bring me at least one so I can move through this. So the land was difficult, meaning it was a place where you would not expect much success. And it was a year of famine, which means things weren't doing well. Even the good fields, even the fertile fields, weren't producing much. Mea sha'arim, as Rashi says, means, that should do, 100-fold. Sadji Gohan says, obviously it couldn't be literal, 100-fold. He says it seemed 100-fold. It was lefi ha'ayin. It was what he was able to notice or see with his eye, so to speak. Okay, so now we are going to quickly conclude today's class with a fascinating statement which is made by the Medrash. Please join us on page... What's to make a difference? On page Shin Lamed Ches, Vayizra Yitzchak, here we have a quotation, an excerpt of the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer in Perek Lamed Gimel. So Rabbi Eliezer says, V'chi Yitzchak Zora Dogon, do you think Yitzchak was planting wheat? Chas v'shalom, heaven forfend, why would Yitzchak plant wheat? Elo, lokach es kol meiser memoinoi v'zora tzedakah laniyim. This was just an investment of tzedakah. He took the money that he had for tzedakah, he invested it so that it should make even more money for tzedakah, and he was planning to distribute a lot of tzedakah. Kamod amart, as it says, v'ziru lechem l'tzedakah, plant for tzedakah. So therefore we can say plant for tzedakah, you know, today in the modern terminology they say run for kindness, jump for kindness, right? Walk for kindness, plant for kindness. But that wasn't just some kind of marketing gimmick where you got people to sponsor you and you did something weird. But here, this the idea was that he planted for the purpose of tzedakah. So the Rebbe asks a question on the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer's question. Like the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer begins with this proverbial question. V'chi Yitzchak zara dogon? Did Yitzchak plant grain? And then, before you have a chance to answer, the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer answers for you and says, Chas v'shalom, heaven forfend, Yitzchak would plant grain? Chas v'shalom. How could you think that? So Rebbe says, please explain that to me. What exactly is the amazement, the wonderment? Yitzchak planted grain? Yeah, he planted grain. Oh. Yitzchak made a living? Yeah, he made a living. What exactly is the issue? Chas v'shalom. Heaven forfend. This goes into the narrative of that the Jews are religious, don't work, which is actually not true. In fact, there's a guy who did a study. The difference between secular Israel and religious Israel, as far as the workforce is concerned, is 10%. The whole difference is 10%. In the secular circles, there's about 85% of people who actually hold down normal jobs and work, and the religious sector is 75%. 10%. Anyway, so Yitzchak worked. Ha! He was a vuzvuz. He was one of these Haredis. He didn't work. Chas v'shalom, he should work. God forbid. But it says he worked. Don't take it seriously. He worked. It was just for tzedakah. What is wrong with Yitzchak planting? Did Yitzchak plant? Yeah, he planted. The Torah says he planted. Yitzchak was a farmer. Yitzchak was a farmer? Heaven forfend. How could Yitzchak be a farmer? He was a farmer. What's the problem? He's planting the land of Israel. It's a mitzvah. It's a holy thing to do. I mean, you're not allowed to take a pasuk out of its literal meaning. If Sadi goes and says doing something like that is wrong. And it says in the pasuk that he planted. So the Rebbe explains it like this. Mavur b'chsidus, it's explained in the teachings of chsidus. Sha'atam lakach sha'oves ha'yoroyet zayin, the reason that the patriarchs and most of the shvatim, excepting Joseph, all chose to be shepherds, humishum sha'avei dezu, einem afriya ledveikas belakus. Involving yourself with sheep doesn't get in the way of spiritual communion and service. Ki b'chol ha'asokim yesh tirda rabba me'oid. Any business you're going to be in, you're going to work hard. The people who think they're going to be in business and make money without working hard, think again. There's no such thing. Nobody has an easy time making a living. It's tough. It's always been tough. And look at Avodas Adama. When you talk about a farming, working the land, it's very tough. There's a tirda, there's a tremendous effort, and there's a worry, a daiga, there's harisha and there's zriya, there's sowing, and there's plowing and sowing and planting, and then finally harvesting. Avorei etzain, but the person who's with the sheep, yochali is pani b'chol machshavei built l'Hashem levade. So what does he have to do? He's got to sit there with the sheep. He's got to make sure the sheep eat. He doesn't feed them. He doesn't spoon feed them. The sheep feed themselves. You just bring them to the grazing area. So what does he do? He's a glorified mashgiach. He just stands there and watches. If a wolf comes, he has to go and attack him, protect the sheep. But that's about it. So therefore, that was the ideal thing to do, because it allowed you for lots of time for spiritual pursuit. It didn't get in the way of being spiritually minded. It didn't get in the way of thinking about God all day. So that's why they wanted to do it. And this then is the question of the Medrash. Once you take the perspective of Chassidus, that the reason that the Shvatim specifically and purposefully chose to be with the sheep was because that was the way that they were able to protect their spiritual integrity and they were able to experience an elevated state of God consciousness. Once you understand that Zuhi Shelas HaMedrash, this is exactly what our sages are asking. Ketzad Asak Yitzchak Bezriyas Dagan. How then would Yitzchak involve himself in planting? Avoda Hadereshas Tirda V'Daiga. A work, a calling which requires tremendous effort and lots of anxiety. Sha'alulois, which very, very possibly will come lahafriya ledveikusi b'Hashem, get in the way of his service to God. And for the Ovis, service to God was first, making a living was secondary at best. Vahare ha'ovis hein hein amarkova, as the Zohar says, the Ovis, they were perfect paradigms of devotion to God. Every limb, every fiber of their being was totally sanctified and hallowed and dedicated and devoted to Hashem, separated from worldly matters. V'leinasa merkova, they became a wagon, if you will, a chariot, only l'ratzon ha'ayin levadi kol yameim. Just like with the exception of chitty chitty bang bang, when you get in your car does what you say, it doesn't tell you where to go. You're in control, the driver is in control. Well, that's how Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov were. God was the driver in their life, and he was in control. So how could it be he would do something which might get in the way of this calling, of this way of life? And that's the question of the Medrash. He abandoned what Avraham Avinu had showed him. He left behind the sheep, and now he embraced the farming. Was he so keen on getting rich? What happened here? So the Gemara, the Medrash answers, Matarasa shel Yitzchak bezriyas hadagon lehoisel l'shem hadagon atzmei. No, no, no. He wasn't going into business per se. He didn't want to do that. He was happy to make a living, even if it would be eking out a living with dealing with the sheep. But l'shem tzedakah. So why did he do this? He did it for the tzedakah purposes. In order to be mekayim, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of ma'aser properly, ukedivri ha-Rambam, like the Rambam says in Hilchos Malachim chapter 9, where he goes through the evolution of Torah, of how each generation, more things were added in a manner that was promulgated for all, and he says, mitzvahs ma'aser nischad shayideh to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the one who introduced to the world the idea of tithing. Because the mitzvah of tithing, tzedakah with your money, is only rabbinic at best. And according to the vast majority of opinions, it's not a biblical thing. But tithing your grain is biblical. That's the only actual biblical tithing, is with grain, is with the wheat or grain you plant. So therefore, Yitzchak planted dafke tvua, so he should be able to fill this mitzvah all by himself. And now we understand how Yitzchak was a farmer, but really not such a farmer. He did what had to be done as he went through life. He had to protect his wife and his life. He did that. When it was time to go farming in order to do mitzvahs, he did that. But his focus always was on the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he was a Merkava, somebody who was totally dedicated to the higher purpose of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and experiencing an exalted state of God consciousness in each and every moment of life. And what's the upshot? What's the lesson of this? It don't matter what you do. That is your intention is. You can be involved in anything in the world. However, if ultimately it's all about serving Hashem, then that's what it's about. There was a famous chassid of the Alter Rebbe who was a lumber wouldn't say he's a lumberjack, but he would buy forests and he would hire people and they would chop down the trees and they would send them down the river, and that's how he made a living. And he was a very wealthy man. In fact, his name was Binyamin Kletzker. The word klutz is a piece of wood. They called him Binyamin the woodsman, or the lumberman. And the story goes that Binyamin Kletzker was once sitting and making a calculation of all of his business affairs. He was a very wealthy man. And at the end of the whole mathematical equation, where he finished doing his own accounting, he wrote, Ein oid milvadei. There is nothing other than God. In other words, he had a business to run. He can't play games, and he wasn't trying to show off for anybody because he didn't know anybody was going to look at this paper after. But truly, and with full integrity, when he was doing his business, what was he thinking about? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So much so that one time it actually ended up on the paper, Ein oid milvadei. And so you can be a farmer, you can be a business person, you can manufacture, you can stand in the head, whatever you're doing, it doesn't make a difference. If you're doing it with a holy purpose, if it's the purpose of tzedakah, if it's the purpose of Avodas Hashem, then it in and of itself becomes an act of holiness and profound kedusha and dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.